Well, with that, I grew up in the church, which means I was at everything. I was at youth group. I was at just anything and highly involved in that. And so my senior year rolls around, and my youth leaders, despite us having a core group of 3 to 5 teens, decides that we should have a youth takeover Sunday. And so it started to become of, what does that look like? What does that mean? Well, to us, it meant the teens did everything in the service, from the people in the back to streaming and slideshow, and to the people up front doing music and preaching. And between the few of us, I had one friend. He had done sound. He had done music for us before. And so he said, well, I'll do that. I've done that before. I can do that. Awesome. We had a few that could sing, including my brother. They were in chorus and had done that before. They felt comfortable doing that. And so naturally, they did that. We had one person that was okay with public speaking, so they gave announcements that day. But it came down to the preaching. And at this point, I had not volunteered to done anything. I've done sound and stuff like that before, but that was already taken care of for me. I am not a singer whatsoever, and I will tell you that. I don't play any instruments, so I couldn't help out there either. And so it started to become a question of preaching. Would we all preach? Would the 5 of us get up there and say different words and different passages, whatnot? But it came down to asking me to preach. At this time, I had given a few lessons, a few rambles to my peers. And again, that's only 5 to 10 people. If we had 10 people at youth group, it was a good day for us. And so I hadn't really done anything like that. I hadn't really preached. I hadn't really talked in big church at all. And to be honest, I was kind of terrified. And they asked me to do it anyway. And at first, I was like, well, why don't we just have the youth pastor do it? It's a youth takeover. I feel like he counts. He's young enough at the time. I don't want to do it. But persuasion and talking to my senior pastor and talking to my family members and whatnot, it felt like God was pushing me to do this. It felt like I needed to take a step of faith and step of courage to go and do that. And so, with a little persuasion, I finally agreed. I said, I will do it. But what am I going to preach on? I'd done my favorite verses in youth group, but we were in the middle of a series. So, of course, we were going through the Ten Commandments, and the youth were going to preach on honoring your mother and father. I thought that was kind of ironic that I, someone who didn't always follow that rule to a T, and my parents will attest to that, was preaching on that. And so here's a few pictures of me in high school during my first sermon, and I was terrified, if I'm being completely honest. I'd done some public speaking work, but to be honest, this was a different thing. I had to be courageous to step out and do that. And I would consider that act almost dangerous. And we're going to talk about what does that mean to live dangerously for Christ. I've been reading this book called Dangerous Jesus. And that sounds kind of weird to call Jesus dangerous. He wasn't like a warrior of any kind. He's not one of those people that you're just scared of. He didn't carry weapons on him. He wasn't jacked. So to be considered dangerous in our world, in our culture, probably means you're going to hurt someone, or you have the ability to do it quickly, or maybe you have these talents to hurt people. And that's kind of what it means to be dangerous. But Jesus was dangerous. As I'm reading through this book and he's talking about different ways that Jesus was dangerous, to me it started to click and started to connect with me. We see danger as holding a knife to you or holding a gun to you or threatening you in some way, shape, or form. But rather, I would go out and say, and I agree with the author when he says this, Jesus was the most dangerous man to ever walk the earth. We think of like wrestlers or maybe athletes or boxers to be as dangerous people, those who have practiced Taekwondo and karate for all of their lives to be considered the most dangerous people. But I would say Jesus has lived the most dangerous life of any of us. He was so countercultural to everything that they did, everything they said, everything they believed, that he became a danger to society, which is why they had to kill him. His agenda did not match the world and what they wanted him to do. The world wanted the dangerous man that we believe that he could be. They wanted a king who would destroy their enemies. They wanted someone to fight for them. Rather, Jesus was dangerous because he was a threat to the oppressor. He was a threat to injustice everywhere. Every symbol of the kingdom of darkness was threatened by merely him being there. He invaded the world instead of a sword, but with love for the unloved. He brought hope to the hopeless and freedom to the bound. That's some pretty dangerous stuff. There's many action movies about someone getting captured and you must go into enemy territory to go out and save that person. That's pretty heroic and pretty dangerous. Jesus did that. He did it in a way that we may not expect, that the people did not expect. And even today, if Jesus were to come and do that again, I would say he's living his most dangerous life. Now, as I'm reading this book, and I'm like, all right, Jesus has got to be dangerous. We're called to live like Jesus, so that means we need to be dangerous. But how does that work out? How do we live to be dangerous? There's so many things that could stop you from living dangerously like Jesus did. There's things like social anxiety, which is on a peak for young people. There's depression. There's what we think our friends might think. There's people that might judge us. Things that, and quite frankly, we might die for it. I had the privilege of being a camp counselor this past week at senior high camp, and that was one of the questions that I asked these boys from Twin Falls. What is one thing that you refuse to go do for God? Like, if God asks you to do it, he's given you everything. He's equipped you to go and do it, and you refuse to do. I think every boy in that room looked at me and said, I don't want to die. They don't want to be martyrs. They don't want to die for their faith. And if I'm honest, I don't know if I want to either. So I totally understand that. So there's so many barriers that and excuses that we can make to stop living dangerously. And so my thought, instead of coming up here and telling you just live dangerously for Jesus, we got to figure out how to live dangerously for Jesus. And so as I start to read and go through, what does God call us? Because he calls us all to live like Jesus, and you've heard sermons and series on those kind of things. So I could go up and do that. But instead, I like to do a puzzle. So if we need to live like Jesus and be dangerous, we need to figure out how to get here. So start reading through the Old Testament, and one word starts to pop up, courageous. I'm like, that's interesting to be courageous. He calls us to be courageous, but I truly didn't understand how many times throughout the Bible he calls us to be courageous. I think a perfect example of this is Joshua. The story of Joshua starts in Deuteronomy as Moses starts to hand this baton off to Joshua. It's been known that he is going to be the leader of the Israelites. Finally, they get to the promised land, and Moses is not allowed to go to the promised land, so he must give the baton to Joshua. As Moses starts to wrap up these speeches, and he's soon going to die, Moses, in Deuteronomy 31, 7 and 8, Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all of Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with his people into the land the Lord swore to their ancestors to give to them. You must divide it among them as their inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. And so that's cool. Moses is calling Joshua to be courageous. I'm sure many of you, when you want to do something, you're called to do something you don't want to do. I'm sure many of your friends and peers and people around you say, just be strong, courageous, believe in God. And it's kind of cool to hear that from each other and peers. But if we read further down in 31, the Lord talks to Joshua and says, the Lord gave this command to Joshua, son of Nun. Be strong and courageous, for you will bring the Israelites into the land I promised to them on oath, and I myself will be with you. All right, so now Moses has told Joshua to be courageous, and now God himself has told Joshua to be courageous. And so, which is pretty cool. If God told me to be courageous, I think that would take it, but God doesn't talk to me like that, and sometimes I need it. I ask for God all the time to just show up and yell at me almost. And I'm sure many of you would like that too. Or even a letter would be great. But that's not the only time we see the Lord tell Joshua to be courageous. A lot of us know Joshua 1:9, be strong and courageous. And it's a necklace that I wear, I've worn since the day I've been baptized. And so a family friend gave it to me. It said, be strong and courageous. I was 11 at the time. I had not yet received my call to ministry. But I remember her telling me and saying, I don't know what exactly you're doing, but God will use you. And to an 11-year-old kid, I'm just like, cool. Is there money in the card, though? And so there was, and I appreciated, the 11-year-old me appreciated that then. But 23-year-old me appreciates the necklace that she gave me. It's nothing fancy. I'm sure it didn't cost her a lot. But the message that she believed me and called me to be strong and courageous is something that I align with Joshua here. And we see in Joshua 1:5, throughout these next five verses, God's going to call Joshua to be strong and courageous over and over again. So starting in Joshua 1:5, no one will be able to stand against you in all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it from the right or to the left, for it may be successful wherever you go. Keep the book of the law always on your lips. Meditate it on day and night, so you may be careful with everything written in it. Then you will be prestigious and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So just in those few verses, you see God call him to be strong and courageous over and over and over again. And he's got good reason to be strong and courageous. Joshua is then going to cross the Jordan River. He's going to fight in battles such as Jericho. And he's going to fight in different battles, but every time he follows God and is strong and courageous, they end up winning that battle. Not because Joshua is a phenomenal warrior, not because the Israelites are phenomenal warriors, or they have cool tactics or better swords or whatever that is. They are just strong and courageous. Every battle they lose, they are not. They get greedy. They get told, don't bring stuff from Babylon. Don't bring stuff from Jericho. And they do anyway. And they start to lose. But as soon as they realize their way and go back to being strong and courageous, they start to win again. And the whole book of Joshua is not about the Israelites being winners and being phenomenal in war. Rather, it's, are they faithful to God? If the answer is yes, it's a simple win. If they are not, they're going to lose. So as we think about being dangerous, I think we have to start with being courageous. We have to take that first step into being courageous. Because even though the Lord tells Joshua here three more times, and in five times by Moses once and God four times, we've been told to be strong and courageous. We have to start that way. We can't live dangerous. We can't walk the walk. We can't talk the talk without taking our first step. And that first step can be courageous. Whether it be answering a call to ministry in the professional setting or answering the call to ministry to the work that you do now, to the people you interact with now. Because even though I might have the title of pastor, but we're all pastors in what we do. You guys minister to people that are different than I minister to. You minister to different circles of group than people sitting next to you. You interact with different people, whether it be at the grocery store or at work or even your neighbors. We may all be part of Baker, but we can all interact with different people, being strong and courageous. And so, like Joshua, he fights battles. He's faithful, he's strong, he's courageous, and he wins those battles. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm personally not fighting any hand and fist battles. A lot of it is mental and emotional things that we have to fight through. Last I checked, there wasn't a battlefield on the streets of Baker, and if there was, someone let me know because I need to be ready. In order to be strong and courageous, we need to take a step to what Jesus was. Jesus never picked up a sword or fought like Joshua or the Israelites did, but he was still dangerous. He's the most dangerous man alive. And I wonder why that is. One of the big things was Jesus took the ability, instead of thinking what's best for me, because the culture, that's how it was. If you were blessed, if you were doing good, you were considered blessed by God. If you're doing poorly, sickness, illness, you were cursed from God. But instead of taking that thinking, Jesus says, instead of thinking about yourself, think instead of what's best for me, what's best for others. He says, what's best for me is actually me going out and being a servant to those people. What's best for me is actually loving your enemies. What's best for me is to put you first and put me last. The fact that Jesus ended up washing the disciples' feet is crazy to me. I don't even like washing my own feet, let alone anyone else's. I'm sure many of you would agree with that. If I handed out cloths to go wash your neighbor's feet, I don't know if many of you would take that challenge, and myself included in that. That is why Jesus is so dangerous. He gives us mercy, truth, and grace over anything else. When someone slaps your right cheek, offer up another chance on the other one. See if they can do better. You know how crazy that is if you were in a fist fight and someone hit you and instead you said, you know what, that wasn't a great shot, I'll let you hit me again on the other cheek. You know how crazy you would sound? Anyone that's ever gotten into some sort of fight or scuffle knows like that's crazy. The world would look at you as crazy. You swing back, right? You hit them if they hit you. Maybe you got to hit first. But Jesus says, no, let them hit you twice. Let them hit you on your left. Let them hit you on your right. That's insane. Imagine opening up a dojo and telling them, let them hit you twice in a tournament. Or whatever the case is, let them do that. Because that's how crazy and dangerous God is. We see on the Sermon on the Mount, he calls blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek. A weakness that the world would consider, whether it be financially or physically, whatever it is, God says, blessed are those people. Those are the people we're going to use. This is what being dangerous looks like. We are going to go out and live so counterculturally that people are going to ask questions and might even get mad at you for some things. Now, living dangerous is not easy. I'm sure you've all seen those people who walk tight ropes on the Grand Canyon, or they ride tricycles across them, or they lift thousands of pounds, or whatever dangerous feat it is. It's usually a physical danger to themselves or others. But I want us to be a spiritual danger to others. That doesn't mean get your Bible wrong and use out of context, because that is dangerous. But rather using the word and using our actions so lovingly with so much grace that people are just scared of you. They're like, why are you so nice? My senior pastor would always say something at the end of his sermons. He would say, go and live questionable lives. Have people ask you, why are you so courageous? Why do you live this way? Why are you the way you are? When we live dangerously, instead of piercing people's skin, we pierce their heart with the Bible. We pierce them with our actions, with our grace, with our love and mercy, the way that Jesus has done that. Jesus grew up in Nazareth, and if you know anything about Nazareth, nothing good can come from there. It's the ghetto. It's this weird place that nothing good can come from. And I'm sure people in LeGrand might say, there's nothing that good come from Baker. And you might turn around and say, there's nothing good can come from LeGrand. Well, I challenge you that God can use you wherever you are from, wherever you are. The disciples were probably the equivalent of some college frat guys. The way they used slang, the way that they were uneducated, the way they were ill-equipped to give the word. That's the way the world saw it. If they were any good, they would be Pharisees. They would be Sadducees. They'd be people in religion. Instead, they're fishermen, they're tax collectors, they're lowlives. But God uses them and trusts them and tells them to spread the word. All those guys lived dangerous lives. Every single one of them except John ended up dying, being crucified, being stoned, because they lived a dangerous life. They were so much of a threat to the culture, the status quo, the things that we would call normal, that they had to die. Only the dangerous people do that. Only those that are a threat die. I'm not saying that all of us have to be martyrs, but we have to live a dangerous life like God calls us to. We have to pick up our Bibles. We have to be strong and courageous, and that will lead us to a dangerous life. courageous leads to dangerous. And I just want to flip to the title screen. You'll see a bunch of words crossed out on that. Jesus can be called fragile. You know, he's soft. He doesn't want to invoke violence. He doesn't want to fight back. He's got to be fragile. Rather, I tell you, he's dangerous. Last I checked, the Bible doesn't say, go and be comfortable, sit on your couch. It says, no, go into the world and make disciples. We're not called to sit where we are. We're not called to be complacent. We're called and go. Jesus was nothing but complacent. 3 years he walked up and down all around Israel in different cities, visiting people, talking to people. We need to do the same. We can't be true Christians if we sit in our house 24/7. You guys all have jobs, schools, ways you interact with people on a social level. Those are where we're called to go. Might be considered Jesus irrelevant. Our world sure says so. Our world doesn't believe. Statistically, the church is dying. Statistically, a lot of the new generation don't want to walk into these buildings. So we need to go where they are. We need to show them that not only Jesus is not irrelevant, he is dangerous. He is going to change your life. And I truly believe that. I always tend to have some sort of element to show things here. And I was thinking of something. What can we do that would be dangerous? Be courageous. So I bought some dry ice. I'm going to put some gloves on. Last I checked, I don't know how many pastors have to put on work gloves in order to do their sermon illustrations. So I would consider this pretty dangerous. If you want to try this home, you're more than welcome to. I would wear gloves if I were you. But we're called to live dangerously. We're called to live courageous, and that leads to being dangerous. Bubbles in and of themselves are not dangerous. That's why we let our kids play with them. At least, we tell them not to eat it, but if, I don't know if you were like me, but I ate bubbles as a kid, and I turned out pretty okay. They even have flavored bubbles for dogs now, so they're encouraging it. But bubbles inherently are not dangerous. They're soap, they're water, they're a fun toy that we give little kids to play with. I remember growing up, I would play bubbles. But it doesn't take much courage to blow a bubble. It's pretty easy. Anyone can do it. Little kids do it. Old people do it. Anyone can blow a bubble. It's pretty easy stuff. Now, life is a lot like blowing bubbles. We can choose to blow bubbles wherever we go. We can blow them. They're any size, but eventually they're going to fall and they're going to pop. They're not lasting. They don't really do a whole lot. They look pretty. Some of them are different colors these days and different scents. But they're not a whole lot. Nothing dangerous to them. And people are going to forget them. Eventually they'll pop, people might break them, whatever it is. But when we pair up with God, something cool happens, something special. When we step out to be courageous, like blowing a bubble, and live dangerously in God's love, if I can do this right, it's not going to, oh, there we go. So we got a few bubbles floating in here. And in God's courageous, we can do something longer, something that might last a little bit longer. When we live a life that is not dangerous, people don't remember us. No one writes a story about Joe Schmo most of the time. We hear about Bible characters all the time, but most of them are pretty epic. People that have won battles, people that live dangerously and end up dying. And maybe we won't go up to that point, but we're gonna work with a lot of people. These bubbles won't do a whole lot. They won't last very long without God. Maybe they'll roll around, stay on the floor for a little bit, but they won't do a whole lot. But some of these bubbles will float. With God, we can rise to new heights. We can live dangerously. We can be around and affect people. Without God, or this dry ice, we're not going to float, we're not going to do anything, we're not going to step out into anything. We're just going to live our life and live carelessly. We're not going to be dangerous. We're not going to step out in courage. We're not going to be strong. We're going to put us as God. But when we put God as God, when we live like Jesus, when we follow through on our calling, we be courageous. We live a dangerous life. At camp this week, the speaker said something that really stuck out to me, and it really worked for me. And maybe you're not resonating with being dangerous. But he said, do dumb stuff with God, not for God. And that really stuck with me. I do dumb stuff all the time. But we do dumb stuff with God, we're going to be dangerous. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. We don't have to lead people into battle. We don't have to go out and travel the world to do that. We can do it in our own home. We can be dangerous to the people of Baker. It's always crazy to me that if everyone in this room invited one person to church and they all came at once, it would be doubled. This room would be packed. It would be crazy. And when we live dangerously, we can have almost a snowball effect. If all of us step out to be courageous, we are something powerful. We are an army of God, and we can all live dangerously. As the band comes up and we play our last song, I just want to think about how we can live dangerously this week. Things that we can do to pierce hearts for God. Things that we can do that aren't dangerous to them physically or emotionally, but spiritually it challenges what they're doing. It challenges the status quo. It challenges maybe your work culture. It challenges what they believe. Live dangerously for Him, and He'll take care of the rest.